Off the Ball Rugby.
You know, and in that coffee in Melbourne, Joe did say that, you know, stay fit. If something happens, you know, we may need you. And I thought, yeah, no chance that's happening, mate.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
I'm delighted to have in studio Owen Heary and Barry Murphy as well this morning. Morning, lads. How are things?
Yeah, morning. How are you? Pat?
We're keeping well. Keeping well. Loads of headlines in the back pages after a brilliant night for Irish football last night. Sheldon Rovers advancing to the Conference League group stages. €7.5 million bonanza combined. What a night for Irish football. It was tainted, obviously, by the news earlier in the day, lads. Of course, the very sad passing, and we touched on it earlier this morning, of Ollie Horgan, just 57 years of age. Some football man and some character and personality around the league and in dugouts up in Ballybuffet and even over in Galway United and across the country. And you can sense by the tributes that have come in for him over the last 24 hours or so that he was beloved and just someone who just bled Irish football, really, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think it's unanimous across the board. Clubs, fans, players, everything. And you just think of in an age kind of where there's a lot of robotics in playing styles and managers. He just stood out as a character. He just wore his heart in his sleeve. And even like from players I've talked to, he went up to Finn Harps to play. They were playing for him. Mm. Went up maybe for a year to play to extend their career, but then ended up staying longer because he was there as manager. And you see him, like even some of the reserve games, like Bowes years ago, like on a Saturday morning, he'd be down watching the Bowes reserves, trying to pick out a player in Daily Mount. Like, he just had that kind of knack. He was so dedicated.
Yeah, he was had the privilege of being on the pro licence with him. And most infectious laugh you'll ever meet in a person. Like, you wouldn't understand what he was talking about or saying to you, but he'd start laughing and you'd laugh with him. You know, he is definitely a character. And as you say, the arguments on the sideline with the referees and spent 9 years up in Fen Harps, keeping him in the Premier Division, getting him to the semi-final of the Cup against Pats. But yeah, he'd be really, really missed, like, you know, and it's a tragic loss to the football in general. As you said, he's involved in football at a young age, fan into the whole lot, and he knew the players inside out, young players with the skills coming through, and they all just had a liking to him, and that's the way he was. He was that sort of man that everyone, he drew people to him, like, you know, and he's definitely going to be sorely missed.
Because that kind of bleeds into camps, doesn't it, Keith? When you know when a manager is clearly obsessed with the game, and shows they're obsessed by going to all these games and amateur games, underage games, and you can probably get the feeling from a dressing room if a manager is obsessed with the game and you play for him.
Yeah, you can feel the love oozing out of Ollie Horgan when he used to be around the ground. You could feel, and I listening to Vinnie Peart saying that he done 3 games in one day and he turned around, and every game he turned around, Ollie Horgan was next to him. It's just an absolute love for it, and it's the one thing when I started doing my coaching badges, I looked across and I thought the love that these coaches and managers have coming through far outweighs mine. I mean, I went through the ringer as a player, so the love that it just wasn't there for me from a coaching side of it, but yeah, the love that Ollie had for football really did seep through into the players, and you could see he was a brilliant man manager, getting people on board and generally not being as good as the opposition, but you know, not taking a backward step, always having a right pop off of everybody, and you know, an absolute character and a messer, a serious bloke. He had a little bit of everything. He had every quality you need to be a coach, and he was loved by everybody, which is a opposition as well, which is not an easy thing to say.
Like a vocal advocate for the League of Ireland as well, like someone that the type of personality that the league needs, because everyone, you know, people mightn't have watched a Finn Harps game, but they know who Ollie Horgan was, you know, but maybe it's because of the long hair, because of his personality, but he just brought an infectious sort of attitude, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and like you see where the league was as well, and we just talk about what he did with Finn Harps and keeping him in, and you go up there and you look at the facilities around the ground. I can only imagine what the training ground was like, and to do that year on year and still have that enthusiasm, working a full-time job as well. Like, it's just incredible, really. And you look now where the league is going, you would have loved him to be part of it, because he's put in the legwork and the dog work, and you'd have loved him to be a part of what the league is now moving forward.
But even on that, when, you know, players, say Galway, when they had a defeat, I'd say to John Coffey, now you'd have to pick the players up. He said, no, I don't need it, because Ollie does that, and Ollie does it brilliantly. He said, them lads just bounce into training because, you know, Ollie's going to be there, like, and it's, that's the man he was. As I said, people wanted to play. He wanted to be part of his team, and he kept them there. As you said, like, going to Finn Harps is a long old trek for a fella from Dublin, and he brought a lot of them up, and they wanted to stay up there, like, which is unheard of. Like, you know, players go for a year, and it's like too much travelling. I don't want to be up there. But I know a few players have been up there, and as Barry said, they wanted to be there because of Ollie.
Yeah, absolutely. As we said, thoughts with his family and friends. Sad day for the League of Ireland with the passing of Ollie Horgan, just 57 as well, no age, as we said yesterday. On the pitch, I suppose it was commendable tribute to Ollie Horgan. What happened, you know, both up in Linfield and in Tala last night. You were on co-coms, Barry, for the Rovers game. And before the game, I kind of felt a little bit nervy because 2-1, unbelievable result against the Portuguese fifth place team over there in the Azores. But such a professional job last night.
It really was. And there was a nervousness around the ground as well, because I think Rovers lifted to their standards what we thought. Santa Clara haven't got to the standards. What is the benchmark for them? And like, you look at their squad, 17 Brazilians, quality outfit as well, fifth in the Portuguese league last year, and you think they've got to have more to them than they did in the first leg. But Rovers just did so well over there, scored two quality goals, brought it back here, and he kept the same side, played Nugent in that kind of holding midfield role, just in a three in front of that back five for Shamrock Rovers, and they didn't have to do too much. Rovers, just as you said, were professional about it. Josh Honan, a great chance, crashed it off the bar, but that save from Ed McGinty at about 60 minutes. Like, it's just,
I was wondering how long it would take you to bring up the
scene. I can't have them with my screensaver now. It was incredible. Like, but it was just that moment in time. They scored there, momentum was with them, and phenomenal save. And even the one 10 minutes later down to his left hand side. So he made two big saves when they needed it. And that, from Rovers down through the years in Europe, has always been a big moment, and that was it last night.
How good was the save from a mechanics point of view? Obviously, you as a goalkeeper, because Roy Keane was here, he'd say that's his job, but yeah, it was an unbelievable
world class. Like, yeah, when you look it back, and kind of, we lucky last night, there were seven different angles we had of it, and it's the ball across, it's the movement across the goal, the sharp feet, you're totally unsighted. The vice caught it, finishes caught it so well on the volley. Ed can't move his feet, it's all about his reaction, but his hands are in a great position. They're up high, the ball is past his shoulder when he gets his hand to it, and it's the strength in his shoulder and his elbow, the manipulation of the hand to be able to flick it over the bar. Just an absolutely incredible save.
Yeah, I think it's a needless corner he gave away, to be honest.
The defender's
Now, as you say, Rovers, brilliant result, but they've been planning for this for a long time. I think with Rovers, they are built for European football, and I think they last night proved it, that he went over to Portugal, got a great result, but came home and finished the job. And again, we expect Rovers to be in the Conference League, you know, group stages. I think we expect that every year from them, and they're hitting Europe every year. They're sort of the Rosenberg of Norway going back a few years, where they're constantly hitting them levels and other teams have to keep up with them now.
I thought Rovers in the first 45 minutes, neither team had a shot on target in the first 45 minutes. I thought Rovers found a really good balance between going for it and, you know, sort of not stinking out the house, just taking their time, putting their foot on the ball when they needed to, but having a threat, you know, not defensively, but not overly going for it. Do you feel they found a good balance, Baz?
Yeah, when you look at the away legs, they've kind of a set template of how they play in the away legs. You've got Grant on the right and Honan on the left. It's nearly a tether around them, so it's a back five. They don't let them push on at all. They don't engage the back five of Santa Clara or the two wing backs. And then when they come home, it's usually the other way around. It's usually the freedom in front of it, and you play with two in front at home, and you'd have that freedom at home. But because they were 2-1 up from the away leg and cruising kind of from that leg, didn't need to do that. Santa Clara never got in behind them. They had Wendell up front. He's kind of a come and get the ball from the midfielder point of view. They brought on Silva then, who's a legs man, the fastest man in the world. He was like 40 kilometres an hour, but he never got in behind. And Rovers just kept the defensive line, and it was all pot shots from outside the box, good blocks, but again, never really threatened. I just didn't get to the levels we were expecting Portuguese side to get to in terms of quality around the final third. And Rovers kind of dealt with it well, bar the last kind of 5 minutes where it was back to the wall. It was kind of a League of Ireland performance in Europe of old, of the long balls into the box, throw-ins and things you didn't expect from Portuguese side. But Rovers dealt with it well and got through. Yeah.
Defensively, they're tough enough games to come through, I'd imagine, because the wind is obviously a factor in Tala anyway, but balls are coming into that box and they're having to clear them out, and it was kind of nervous stuff.
But especially when it's nil all, and like you say, you don't want to push on too much. You're sitting back, holding out, saying, we got to draw here, we're through, like, you know. And it's, as you say, it's a mindset of, right, you see a fullback going forward, and you're like, hold on, drop back in here, don't want you going there, and you're keeping everything tight. And as Barry said, it comes to like where there's crosses coming in, throw ins coming in, you just have to deal with them, and they've done it perfectly. And when you have a keeper behind just pulling off unbelievable saves, gives you a lot of confidence as well then to push up high when you have to.
I thought the messages that Stephen Bradley sent out with his substitutions as well were really good, because at times, you know, you're playing in a game that you're expecting the team to be really good. Sometimes you can sit there and wait for their power and think, well, they haven't been great, and you you get a little bit complacent. But he takes off Nugent in the 60th minute, puts on Graham Bourke, takes off Gaffney in the 70th minute and puts on young Michael Noonan. They're not defensive changes. They're not, let's soak up the pressure here and get over the line. That's it. Let's go and win it. And that must be a brilliant, you know, if you're on the pitch, you're thinking, we're going to win this. We're not trying to just limp through here. It must be brilliant to be on the pitch and witnessing them substitutions coming on.
And I think as well, that giving on legs, as you say, like Nugent, things like that, they'll give you that, we'll let him chase everything up front or let him get around the pitch and we keep our defensive line that we don't have to push forward. And I think when you get Bourke on, who you know will keep the ball, yeah, and is clever on the ball, their substitutes, that you say, it's like when we played Europe, Joe and Doe would come on and you're like, well, you know what you're getting there. You give him the ball and just say, we're staying here. Look, Joe, you go and do whatever you have to do. And I think Bourke is that sort of player where, give him the ball, defensively we'll keep tight and just let him see if he can create something on the break for us.
Yeah.
Two of the back three were yellow card as well. Rosh at centre half, like, and Gaffney had kind of ran out of legs at that stage. He's whatever age he is now, but you've got Noonan who can come on, get that ball, can stretch it, can kind of put them under pressure. Berkey finds the pocket, scores a lot of goals in Europe, and like Rovers have that now where they can bring lads on from the bench. But even the interview before with Stephen, we kind of said to him, what's the game plan? Is it stay in early or what kind of way are you looking at? And he's like, no, everyone's going to play from the bench. It's going to be really important. So it wasn't a case of, right, it's nil all, we'll see it all the way to the end. Offer that check going forward when Graham Bourke came on, and that took a lot of pressure off, drew a lot of fouls from the Santa Clara back four, and that kind of took a lot of pressure off. So it was never sustained pressure from Santa Clara in the end.
Matt Healy cleaning up as well for that back three.
He was just sensational, and he was quietly really good as well. And probably look at McGinty as a goalkeeper, probably should have given him man of the match. But just from seeing it, it's a great vantage point to see who's doing what work. And he just sat in that little pocket in front of the back five and cleaned up everything. And as he said, it was all kind of pot shots from the edge of the box, and took one in the face as well early on, but kind of earned him that man of the match award for that.
It was brilliant as well just to see Josh Bradley, you know, the scenes at the end, just amazing what that family have gone through and the club as a whole, I suppose, as well. And as you mentioned, I think, was it Mary Larkin, the sports psychologist, yeah, towards the end as well? And she's someone who, if you speak to anyone around Shamrock Rovers, has been pivotal to what the success the club has had over the number of years.
Yeah, and Stephen mentioned it over there when they went over to Santa Clara, actually, just the size of the pitch and just having a little reset. The players were kind of going in, and you obviously have a lot of time around the hotel and those European fixtures, and she's a fixture now around that Rovers backroom staff, but she's brilliant. I've used her myself when I retired. Obviously found it difficult when I retired, went in and used her, and she's brilliant. And to not have that when you're playing, when we were kind of going through the ranks, you're kind of missing something in your kind of makeup as a player, but to have that in the dressing room just takes a little edge off things. You can focus on just the pure football side of things, and obviously Stephen's kind of lent on her a lot in these last 3 years and took a lot from her, but she's been brilliant around the whole squad, and it's paying dividends.
Sorry, Keith.
No, so I was going to ask about Josh Honan. I thought he had a solid game defensively. He had a lovely little dribble where he hit the crossbar as well. With the European group stage football, do you think he's got closer to the Irish team? He's obviously missed out on this one, but now with the group stage football, do you think he's closer to more of a viable option now for Hamer?
I don't think so. I think he should be, but I don't think he is.
You think he should be?
Yeah, I think he should be. I think he's got to be closer. I think he offers something different to what we have when you've got like Manning and O'Dowd are kind of filling in for positions in that kind of left wing back role. Obviously, Robbie Brady's out, brings him a little bit closer, but I think his performances in Europe at elite level we're talking about now, it's not just like he's gone and done it in a couple of games. He's elite at the moment. I think he's got to be closer to that setup. I think he's got to be in and around the squads, and obviously, getting into the final 23 is a different story, but like, I think he's at that level now. And you're going to see it'll be that kind of magic playing again. When he does go away, he'll be in those squads, I think.
Mm. From Michelle's perspective, Owen?
Oh, absolutely brilliant.
You're just brilliant. Mad to talk about Michelle.
They were very good. You know, that's the game I watched last night. And
yeah,
from start to finish, they were the best team on the park. Linfield never laid a glove on them at all. Like, and that pass and Michelle's pass and that movement, interchange and the goals, everything just to a T. Now, I know they've been 3-1 up from the first leg, but it was vital to get the very first goal of that game last night, not give Linfield any chance. And it was some goal to score as well. Like, Ali Coote was excellent. Great ball in, run off the back, and a great finish. And then Ali Coote then coming up with the second goal. But as I said, from start to finish, it was just an all-round pure, brilliant performance. And, you know, I suppose this is Ollie Bourne's dream from years ago, hoping that Shells would get into a group stage. And you see it being fulfilled. Like, it's absolutely a brilliant result and brilliant for the club itself.
Must be some buzz around the club, as you said, earlier, Keith. Like, for that draw after 12 noon today, another Europa League draw and the Europa League Conference League draw both on today in Monaco. Like, the buzz waiting to see who you're going to get
Oh, so that's I mean, we were talking about that. Do you want a big team like a Palace, or do you want a team where you can beat and get, you know, good money in and keep continuing on getting the points on the board? And I said, to be honest, I'd rather the lesser teams and try get through, because if you qualify for the next stage, then you're coming up against really big opposition, and you know the money is phenomenal. So yeah, I'd probably rather the lesser teams, that ones that we can say, well, look, we can compete with these and get through, get the points on the board, earn some good money, and then maybe get a big team at the end of it. Like, so hopefully. But as I said, it's, I think the Conference League for Irish footballs is unbelievable. It's a brilliant tournament to be in, to be involved in, especially, you know, Shell's going into the Champions League, get through a round, get knocked out of the Europa League, and then you still have that chance of qualifying for a group stage in the Conference League is excellent for that. And Rovers have shown it over the years as well, like getting in there. So for Shell's, you know, the draw today, we're all looking forward to, but what you really need to do now is continue and try to get that form in the league and qualify again for Europe. But that's a big ask for them, I think, this year. Like, but at the moment, you just have to enjoy what they're doing at the moment, and that's, you know, European waiting for the draw today.
Yeah, the most important, the most impressive thing for me yesterday was the way Shelbourne just broke Linfield's spirit. You could tell Linfield wanted to get after Shelbourne, put them under pressure, get the first goal and see what happens. But I thought Shelbourne would be an awful lot more pragmatic. But as you say, the little triangles in the middle of the pitch, the way they kept it, the ball retention, they would go to the edge of their 18-yard box, turn down across and keep it and make them chase them. And in and around the 20th, 25th minute, just after Wood's goal, Linfield had enough. They looked absolutely out of their legs, didn't they?
Didn't look interested. I think the pitch is too big for Linfield.
Yeah.
You know, and it suited Shells because they have legs in the team and they're well into their season, and they used the whole pitch. It wasn't just a case of keeping it nice and tight. They used the whole pitch and they really enjoyed themselves last night. You could see that, and as you say, in their one-touch pass and their movement, their flicks around corners, their interchanging, you know, your fellas coming in from the wing into the middle, and the lads, McEnroy, ending up out on the wing, like, which just showed that they're interchanging, but they're enjoying what they're doing, and they knew each other's role inside out.
Yeah, it's fluid, and the bench was so strong for Shelbourne. You look at Evan Caffrey, Mark Coyle, John Martin, Kelly Ledwich, all coming off the bench. So even if you get into deep water, that's a good strong 17 players.
I think they need that in Europe. You know, if you said that, like, teams need to be building towards that now. Like, you need to be investing in your team, and Shells have done that over the last few years, and you've seen that since you come in the Premier League, you know, staying in the Premier and then getting up the fort and then winning the league. Now they're in Europe, you know, you have to keep investing in your team. And Rovers have shown that, I think, over the last 6-7 years, maybe longer, that keep investing, keep, you know, turning out these players and getting a full squad. And I think that the difficulty now for Shells is, do you invest more in your squad because you're going to be going to Christmas playing? And then if you don't make Europe, what happens to that squad then? You know, what's happening? We're going to enjoy sitting on the bench and only playing one game a week, like in the league next year.
What are Shelbourne fans thinking of this season? Is it a success? Because obviously they haven't retained their title, they're out of the FAI Cup, but the financial rewards of what they've done in the European football is obviously brilliant, and I would call it a success myself. But are the Shelbourne fans on the same page?
I think for Shelbourne fans, they enjoy the ride, and that's it. You know, they're enjoying what's happening at the moment. They're not ones that set goals and say, oh, we have to win the league. They just, when they won it last year, they obviously weren't expecting it to win it last year. Now they're back in Europe, which they haven't done since 2005, and they're enjoying this. No one expected them to get into the group stages of the Conference League, but they're getting through. They look forward to the draw today, and then the next thing for Shells fans will be going to those games and hoping maybe they can get the points on the board and get through a little bit more. But realistically, they'll want to finish in Europe again. That has to be the goal for Shells fans, is to try to get into Europe again. And if they do that, then will they have the same success next year as they did this year? And that's all Shells want. Shells just want, everyone wants success, but you want to keep building on what they're doing over the last 4 or 5 years.
Interesting what you said about the pitch almost being too big for Linfield, because a couple of points in that game yesterday, I think it was Harry Wood maybe a couple of times picked up the ball in the middle, just the amount of space.
You couldn't get near him. Couldn't really get near him. That's the thing. It looked like Linfield had played a whole season and just had no legs. But Shells just used the pitch so well. Like, it's such a massive pitch, and I've played on it. It is big, and it suits players that can run with the ball, and it suits players that have legs and get around the pitch. And that's what Shells had last night, and they had it in abundance. Like, I don't remember even the keeper of Shells making a save. That's being honest. Like, in the first minute, first 10 seconds, the ball into the box, and Gannon makes a good clearance, and you get a free out. Other than that, I don't remember him having to do much in the game.
Tala will suit them as well, going there to play. Like, anytime they've come up recently, they've done well. They have, as Owen said, they have the players to play. So having that expansive football, like Talca is tight, and it's even tighter when UEFA rules around the pitch sizes. But I think Talca will really suit him going now in this league stage.
We're setting a bar been set here, hasn't it, for Irish football going forward? Because now the expectation will be we'll have at least one team in a say a Conference League phase, if not two. All of a sudden, it's not to get ahead of ourselves, but like this is going to hopefully become the norm more so.
Yeah, I think it's dangerous territory as well. Though these two teams are leading from the front, but what's coming behind it's nowhere near good enough in terms of, like, you just look at the news we've had this week with infrastructure changes and things like that. The audit itself, there isn't the kind of infrastructure in place to go and make this sustainable year on year. It's a flash in the pan from these two clubs, but it's been self-raising in terms of Shamrock Rovers. They got outside investment. They've done the academy. They've done things right. Sold players at the right time. Shells are now on that path, starting to do that. Pats have an excellent academy, but they're all doing it from themselves. We're not getting the backing, and I'm sure today you'll see every TD in the country putting out tweets and from their staff. Oh, Irish football's in a great position, but they've done nothing since their manifestos before the election as well. We've seen nothing from them, and it's about time now they put their hands in the pocket and really deal with the young side of the game. Bring it right through to the levels of the senior team, because at the moment it's the teams leading. It should be the government leading it, really.
I don't think we needed an audit to say that was either. Yeah. We've known this over the last 10, 15 years, and people involved in the league have been saying it for the last 10, 15 years. All of a sudden then the FAI come out with an audit and say, oh, look, this is what needs to be done. But we've been screaming from the rooftops for this for a long, long time, and we need investment in the clubs, we need investment in the grounds, we need investment in our academy. Well, hopefully now there's it's been said that this is what it is, this is what we need. Will they go and do it? I don't know. I don't know whether, as Barry said, TDs will come out and say, oh, we'll do this, and Irish clubs are doing great in Europe, but will they back it? I just don't know. I just don't see it happening. I think clubs have to keep fighting for themselves to get the money in.
There is that frustration, Keith, isn't it? Like you hear even Stephen Bradley coming out saying, you know, the need for government funding has never been greater. And, you know, it's almost as if these managers feel the need, perhaps rightly so, to speak out every time they play a game. Every time they have a microphone in front of them, it's shouting from the rooftop sort of stuff.
Yeah, because it's a real issue. And I think if you're a casual fan, you can look and think, oh, well, Shelbourne and Shamrock Rovers have qualified for the European competition. So the League of Ireland football must be in a great place. And on the pitch, it is. But there's so much more that goes with it. You know, the infrastructure, the academy, the contact hours with players, facilities, being able to train. Yeah, it needs to be brought up. Massively, massively needs to be brought up. But the one thing that Shelbourne and Shamrock Rovers have shown that, you know, if we really do throw some proper weight behind this and try and get everything to a certain level, there is rewards to be had, because the talent pool is there. We've shown that, and the league is going in the right direction on the pitch, but off the pitch it's still standing still, which is a major, major problem.
Do you feel like we're heading in the right direction? Like, you know, people talking about the League of Ireland has increased, it feels, anecdotally, in the last even 2 years. Maybe Damien Duff had a factor in that as well. But, you know, maybe you're seeing it with attendances, I don't know. But it feels like it's heading in the right direction, perhaps just a bit slowly, maybe.
I think the product around the league is going in the right direction, and the players on it. But again, it's from the bottom up. We're still way behind. Like, when you look at that audit, it's countries ranked between 51 and 100. We're not going up against like the top 50 countries in the world, but that's not where the audit was. This is countries that are behind us and are in and around us that we're trying to compete with at the moment. So we're way off where we need to be in terms of moving forward. But again, it is time for these people to come up and step forward and not hang off the coattails of our Olympians when they come through looking for photos in the airport and putting out tweets. But that's the way it's been over the last couple of years. And then it'll die down, and if Shells don't qualify next year, or if whatever, the next team doesn't get to the next couple of rounds, or the League of Ireland's back to where it was. It's now time to move this forward and move the league totally forward.
Yeah, totally agree.
If you had to predict now, lads, how do you see, it's impossible without seeing the fixtures, but like, do Shamrock Rovers and Shelbourne have that strength and depth to push on? And
I think Rovers do.
Right.
I think, and the fact that they have a few points in the lead on the board, you know, if they win their game in hand, they're back to 10 points, 8 games left. So I think Bradley was looking for a 50-point mark just before they went into Europe, but he 48 or so, I'm sure he'd be well happy with that. But if they win this weekend, yeah, put the points back on the board, and they'll have that gap where they can rest players, manoeuvre players. Shells don't have that luxury, because Shells really have to win games now to get back into Europe. And it'll be hard for them, because of the fact that you're travelling away, you're coming back, you're playing a match, league match, then you could be back travelling away. You have 3 home games, 3 away games. It's going to be difficult for Shells, but hopefully as I said, had to get the results in Europe and get the money built in and continue building their team. But it's going to be a different ask to see them getting into Europe again.
Yeah, that's squad depth, isn't it? That's what you need to mind. I think Stephen Bradley said they're not going to play a game, obviously, in Europe in September, but once it gets into October, then it gets into a busy enough phase.
But it's 5-6 years in the making for Rovers. There's a player lost here, a player brought in here, and they've got better every year as well. Like, they lost Johnny Kenny last year, Neil Ferrugia. How are they going to cope this year? Gaffney's been sensational, but how much longer has he got left? Where's the next one coming through? You've got Noonan there as well, but they're just a little bit ahead of Shells in terms of the revolution, and to be fighting on all fronts, where are the two fronts now where Shells need to be, Europe and the league. It'd be a little bit hard for them, where Rovers do have that strength and the know-how of the last couple of years to go and perform a little bit better. But I think it's all about the luck of the draw today, who you pull it against. Like, Shells are doing well draw-wise this year, so maybe that continue.
Sly dig there, wasn't it? The luck of the draw.
Don't you know? Yeah, Rovers, man.
Yeah, League of Ireland, man.
It's funny, because I think Joey O'Brien name-checked Damien Duff last night, saying he had a huge part in the success. I'm sure, like, wherever Duffer's watching on from... I'm sure he's watching on with pride, like, this.
Yeah, well, he brought in the majority of those players, like, we said at the start, when he first played Linfield, he would have gone and done all the work on Linfield. Now it is Joey's team, as in how he plays and how the personnel that play, but they are Damien Duff's players that brought in. So in fairness to Joey, he gave Damien a good shout out last night, because he's right, it was a plan that they started together. What, 2-3 years ago, won the league, they're in Europe, and he's continuing that plan on. Like, and I'm sure Duffer was sitting there with pride last night watching them.
Baz, to go back to Shamrock Rovers, is there any word on Jack Bourne? Is he still frozen out? Is there anything where him and Stephen Bradley may be making up? Because I assume once Shamrock Rovers are winning, it's not really a talking point, but you'd assume they'd still love to have him in the league phase.
I think that's the end of him. I think the word is he's going to go to Dubai till December on loan and come back then and maybe find a club here. But in around the kind of dressing room and in around the tunnel last night, wasn't to be seen. So I don't know, if I thought it initially, they've got such a good relationship when he came back from Limassol that time, that whatever went on, it could be reconciled, but it doesn't seem to be that way now. And Rovers are that big now that they can move on. You're not going to be like a guaranteed starter anymore, and you don't have a guaranteed position, and players are going to come in and take your position. So for Jack, it's a tough one, because he's obviously got to go away and play football now to find a club next year. But I think he will obviously have suitors here. He's a quality player, but I think that relationship is broken down as far as I can see.
Christmas in Dubai doesn't sound like much of a punishment, does it?
It's a tough life, isn't it? Yeah. After the sun. In fairness, what about just before we let you go, Barry, Andre Onana and the goalkeeping situation at Manchester United. I feel like every time we have you on, we have to ask you about the goalkeeping crisis, the latest crisis.
It's incredible, though, like, that he's still getting the game. For me, Tom Heaton's the best of the three keepers there.
I was saying this before the show. I said, throw in Tom Heaton, 100%.
He's just a bog-standard good goalkeeper, and that's what Man United need at the moment. Can deal with crosses coming in. Onana, I've just seen... He can't save anything below his knees. It's incredible. And you've got 11 penalties and you're not getting close to any of them. We used to say back in the day when it was a shot and it goes through your hands, we'd a big wrists. That's what he used to say. That's what he is at the moment. He's just not making the basic saves. And as a goalkeeper then, when you do make a mistake, you got to have that experience to not compound it, go looking for work. He does it all the time, gets involved in stuff he shouldn't do to try and make up for the initial errors and then compounds it. And he's just not up to the standard. And I'm just surprised he's still in and around the squad at the moment. I'm surprised he didn't take them out.
The problem is, United have signed keepers to use their feet, but they haven't signed them to use their hands. This is the thing. Onana, I'm a United fan, and every time a ball comes in, you're like, oh, here we go again. Because you know he's coming for it and he's missing it. And the same with Banadier when he was in. You know, they're putting corners in on top of these keepers because they're weak. You know, and they shouldn't be. If you're playing for Man United, you shouldn't be like that. You should be commanding your area. And as you say, they let Henderson go, who's, an excellent keeper. Tom Heaton there, who's a good keeper. And yet they're playing these two who have absolutely no chance when the ball's coming in the air to them. And you can see with defenders now, they're starting to panic. And they're jumping for balls when a keeper's calling for it, that you're expecting, right, he's getting this. Now they're panicking and still jumping for it. And they're all mixing up with each other. But even the corner the other night, short corner, and I was wondering why they didn't have two out to stop the short corner, but then I'm thinking to myself, the reason being is they don't want the ball being put in on top of the keeper, so they allowed him to take a short corner and the ball still gets put in and he misses it. It's a hard one to take when you're a United fan, because they played so well against Arsenal and then that goal goes in, the keeper makes a mess of it, and then again Grimsby to two goals, so you're just like, oh, here we go again, same season.
You played with Tom Heaton, Keith?
Yeah, I played with Heaton at Burnley. I remember his he first came into the building. I think he was at one of the Bristol clubs. I can't remember which one it was, but he didn't have a great time there. And Burnley, he was Sean Dyche's first signing, and the fans were going mental, thinking, what are they doing signing him? He's no good, he's standing still. And I think he got an England cap about 3 years later after signing for Burnley. So he was an excellent, excellent goalkeeper. I think he's 39 now, Heats. And just as I mean this in as a positive way, just your bog standard professional person. You need him to do something, he does it. No real bells or whistles on that, and he just deals with stuff. And yeah, I think, you know, he could do an awful lot worse than throwing him in, but you throw him in, and if he makes a mistake, then you've got three goalkeepers that you don't fancy any of them.
Should have done it at half time today, is taking Anna off him for heating on.
You do with an outfield player.
Yeah. And say, right, put him in, and like, you have nothing to lose. At least you're saying to the board and saying, look, there's the three keepers, you've seen them now. Mm. You've seen what I have to deal with. We have to get someone in here to sort this out.
Yeah.
Bonkers. I think keepers are anyway. There's too much of this trying to push around posts and push this rather than just catch the ball.
Bailing
you out.
Spin your hands and rub them together. Just catch it. Don't mind the gloves and all that.
Yeah. They might need you out of retirement or something, Barry.
She's now into it.
Benito.
I think I put you in retirement.
Yeah, exactly.
Lads, thanks, Billy, for coming in.
Thank you.
As always.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.